It's not weird. Well, actually, we are here to talk about music today.
Are.
Yeah, your subject today is about how music affects your brainwaves.
Yes, it is. It's my last installment for 2024 today, so I thought I'd do the topic that I've been saving for a while, which I feel like is something that people feel like I say this a lot, but this one you really know intuitively, but it's now confirmed in neuroscience. And it's the fact that our brainwaves sync up when we listen to the same piece of music, regardless of where we are, that kind of thing. If we're in the same room as someone else, it's the same brain activity.
Of the other person?
Yes. Because your brain is processing it in the same way, presumably. We don't really know.
All right. So if you're so there's a whole lot of people in the room listening to a track, their brainwaves are all syncing up.
Yes. I'll get to that later.
Oh, sorry.
I jumped the shark.
Yeah.
But it is good timing for this too, because the Museum of Science, which is in Boston, has just a few days ago posted an interview with a neuroscientist, Dr. Daniel J. Levitin, who I really like, talking about this concept. He's also written a book a while ago called This Is Your Brain on Music, which I haven't read all of it, but I've read excerpts. It's very intriguing. And then he's got a new book, which is kind of less related to this specific concept, but it's about music therapy and music for health benefits, of which there are many. So I was looking at a 2019 study about correlation between brain activity for similar pieces of music. And in this study, people's brains synced up more when they listened to music written in a familiar style compared to something less familiar. So it turns out, obviously, our prior experiences with maybe a particular style of music shape our expectations, so that makes it easier to connect with, even on the first listen, which I thought was interesting in a BFM context, because you're always listening to something different. Maybe there's a lot more experimental things than what's on other radio stations, famously. But on the other hand, music in an unfamiliar style, it's not that it doesn't grab our attention as easily, it just doesn't do it in the same way, and your brain's working in a new way to try and, not quite understand it, but wrap your head around it, maybe. So maybe the familiar music might hit a sweet spot right away, while unfamiliar music might need more time to grow on us. But interesting is that when participants listened to familiar music repeatedly, their engagement then dropped off over time, which probably because the novelty wore off, or your engagement might drop off because you know what's coming, that kind of thing. But that didn't happen with unfamiliar music, which seemed to hold their attention longer as they got used to it. It's also worth noting, so that was one study, it's kind of cool, about our differences between unfamiliar and familiar composition styles. But it's also worth noting that there are a variety of theories as to how and why and when music even developed as a human activity, as a group activity. But the consensus that it aids bonding, crucially, is very much decided. So music brings us together. It's cheesy, but it's very true. And a slight sidebar, because I got quite distracted by this concept. If you've ever wondered by why you listen to sad music when you're sad, and it sort of helps in a funny way, even though you're maybe indulging in that emotion, there is a theory about that. And another sidebar within the sidebar, this also depends on cultural kind of aspects, because sad doesn't mean the same thing in every culture. That's about tone of voice, that kind of thing, which translates all into music. But back to the original sidebar, there is a hormone called prolactin that is released in a lot of contexts, but one of those is sadness or grief. And I came across one study from 2024, actually, looking into this idea. And it sort of detailed the fact that for some people, sad music really does make them feel sad, but that's not homogenous. So some people experience a complex mix of things when they listen to a sad song, a bittersweet mix, perhaps, of sadness and pleasure even, while others find the experience entirely negative. I don't know if you've ever talked to someone who's like, I hate sad songs, just be happy, but that's what that's going on for them. So a possible sort of explanation for all of that could be in the hormone prolactin, which is increasing when we're sad, and it creates a kind of soothing, consoling effect. It also comes up when people who are breastfeeding breastfeed, and aids that kind of bonding, but creates that soothing, consoling effect. And so the idea around prolactin is that people with higher prolactin levels might feel a more enjoyable kind of sadness from music, while those with lower levels might feel sadness that's less pleasant and just stone cold sadness. But yeah, that is slightly rudimentary, and the emotional experience is undoubtedly more complex than just being contingent on one hormone and its levels in your body. But it's an interesting sort of potential piece of the puzzle. But back to your brain activity on music, which sounds like a weird thing to say. But Dr. Levitin talks about studies where researchers put individuals in a scanner and get them to listen to music, and they have no other instruction than that. And you can't move in an MRI machine because it'll mess up the scan. But the part of the brain that makes you want to tap your feet or click your finger, that kind of thing, is always active for people even when they're listening to music, and they're not allowed to move, which I thought was kind of sweet. It's like you can't help yourself. You keep trying to tap your foot, but you're actually not allowed, otherwise it'll mess up the scan. But his lab has done work showing that when people listen to the same piece of music, their brainwaves synchronize, and that's regardless, like we were saying before, of whether they're physically together or not. And that's both temporal and physical. So the brain locations are lighting up in the same patterns at the same times. And this is really intensified in gig situations, or when you're listening to just situations where you're listening to a piece of music with a group of people, because we're then in the business of oxytocin being released, which is famously known as the love hormone because it promotes bonding. So yeah, that's the kind of spiel about how music really bonds you because it makes your brain operate in the same way. And Dr. Levitin, scientists love a pun or a play on words, and he seemed very happy with himself when he said, "You're literally on the same brain length," which I thought was quite cute of him. But
so is that like group oxytocin?
Yeah, I mean, it's a release all at the same time. Yeah. Oxytocin is a hormone.
Yeah. So and it's in the room.
I don't think it's in the room. I think it's all in our bodies. I think if it, although, honestly, fact check me on that. It could be, but I highly doubt it.
What if you're not enjoying it?
That is a good question, and that was what I was thinking this whole time. I also read a study that said the more that a musician gets the notes right, the more all of our brain waves are synced. And, you know, the better they're performing, the more in sync we all are. And I thought, well, that's just enjoying it.
when you're talking about brain waves,
yes.
Has that got anything to do with, you know, the state of being in, is it theta and delta and beta?
In EEG, yes.
Yeah, so yeah. That's what you're talking about when you're talking about brainwaves?
Yeah, it's kind of twofold. It's MRI, which is structural and looking at where your brain's lighting up, and then there is EEG, which is, as you say, looking at the kind of state of your electricity in the brain. But Dr. Levitin's studies, which is what I was talking about, do primarily focus on MRI because it's looking at where it's lighting up, what time it's lighting up, the kind of picture of when the brain is doing what, that kind of thing.
Mm, all right. And so today being your last implausible deniability, I've finally remembered what it's called. No, it's not that I've forgotten. It's just one of those things.
It's quite a mouthful.
Mouthful, yeah, difficult to get your head around, your brainwaves around. So what are you doing over the Christmas and summer?
For Christmas, I'm going to Whangata with my family, and then I'm going to Raglan for New Year's with my friends.
Oh, nice.
Which will be...
What's going on in Raglan?
Nothing. We just wanted... we've had bad experiences camping for the past couple of years with the weather. So we said, enough. It's time for four walls.
So you're indoors.
We're indoors.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Have you been to Raglan in the past?
I actually haven't been to Raglan in the past, and someone said to me that I'll leave a surfer and with incense. So I'm excited.
You're what?
They said that I'm going to leave Raglan and
a surfer
and know how to surf.
I'm going to leave with a surfer.
Hey, not opposed to that either.
Right. Okay, so well, hopefully it's the weather's good, the surf's up.
Yeah, hopefully.
Incense is burning. And your track today, I noticed last week you had Kitty Fitz and today you've got Kitty Craft.
I didn't even realise I'd done that. I do. It's Kitty.
Yeah, so this track is Par 5.
Yes.
Kitty Craft. All right, hey, well, thank you so much, Stella, for joining me in the last few months that we've been doing the Saturday Spring. And you'll be back in the new year, we hope.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Karen. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great Christmas and New Year. Enjoy Raglan.
Thank you.
If you do come back, that is. This is Kitty Craft with Par 5.